Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness, and in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness. I said in my heart, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time and for every matter and for every work. I said in my heart with regard to the children of man that God is testing them and that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beasts is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beasts, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from dust, and to dust all return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? Again, I saw the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of the oppressed, and they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors there was power, and there was no one to comfort them. And I thought the dead who are already dead more fortunate than the living who are still alive. But better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun.
The idea of sin, the doctrine of sin, right? Just the reality that sin exists is extremely hopeful, okay? If you don't have sin, you don't have hope. Okay, so let me explain. If you look at your life and the life around you, you look at the world and all of the injustices and what's broken, right? You look at what's wrong and you look at those things that just make you say, like, this shouldn't be, right? That righteous indignation where you see something, you're like, this shouldn't be. If you don't have the doctrine of sin, you won't have any hope there. So we talked last week about moral individualism, this reigning view in our culture on morality, which basically says you get to decide what's right and wrong for you, and you get to decide what's right and wrong for you, and we all just kind of get to decide what's right and wrong. And if we get to decide what's right and wrong, if we see an injustice, if we see something that seems off to us, it makes it really difficult for us to call it what it is. Because if that's right to them, then who are we to say that they shouldn't do that? Who gets to decide if moral individualism is true, what is unjust? Who gets to decide that? And what is your explanation then for the injustices in the world? What is your answer to the question, why is the world so broken if everybody gets to do whatever they want? If sin isn't a reality, if the doctrine of sin isn't true, then what's your answer for why the world is so broken? If we see the evil around us and we can't call it something, right? We can't say that was wrong, right? That's right, that's wrong. If we can't do that, then we find ourselves in a hopeless place when we experience the brokenness around us. That's just the way things are then, if there's no sin. If there's no sin, there's no injustice and there's no justice. There's just life and all of its brokenness, and we can't even say that it's broken. We can't even call it broken. But if there is sin, then there's hope. Because then we get to look at the world, we get to say that is wrong. That is wrong, and it shouldn't be that way. And maybe if it's sin, we can turn from it. If it's sin, maybe there's an answer for it. If it's sin, then maybe we can be rescued from it. If it's sin, then maybe there's an answer to the problems that we see around us. There's hope if sin is true. Now, there are injustices around everywhere, right? We know that. And everyone, Christian or non-Christian, it doesn't matter what we believe, we rightly look at the world and see some of the things that are broken, some of the injustices, and we grieve, right? We grieve the brokenness around us, and it's all over, right? There's the oppression and exploitation of women, the sex slave industry, in the sexual abuse scandals, the Me Too movement, it's around us, right? The Houston Chronicle came out last week with a huge expose exposing cover-ups in the Southern Baptist churches. Right? This isn't just a Catholic church thing. This isn't just a Hollywood thing. This is in our backyard. Injustices in our churches we've grown up in, Right? There's injustices everywhere. This is month is Black History Month, and it gives us an opportunity to remember the injustices, not just slavery, not just Jim Crow, things that are happening right now. Right? Racial tensions right now. Where in this church, you have Black brothers and sisters who experience the world differently than you do. They just do, right? Other minority groups, they breathe the same air that you do and yet experience that air in a different way. There's injustices everywhere. There's the recent legislation regarding late-term abortion that stirs up in us righteous indignation for the most vulnerable among us. Right? I was overwhelmed last week thinking about the millions and millions and millions of aborted babies that will get a front row seat to Jesus while you and I are in the nosebleed section somewhere in heaven. There's injustices, oppression everywhere we look, Christian or not Christian, atheist or believer, we see it and we rightly grieve. Like innately, we know those things are wrong. And for some, again, Christian and non-Christian, for some, the reality of injustice, the brokenness of the world can lead to doubt or unbelief. Where the Christian or the non-Christian looks at the world and says, how can God be good and let this happen? How could God be powerful and not do anything about this? Either God isn't good and he's vindictive and angry and he's a malevolent deity, or he's not powerful and there's nothing really he can do. He's good, but he just can't do anything about it. So that basically makes him not God if he can't do anything. And we think that way. And so for some of us, it's, well, there must not be a God. And for some of us, we think we begin to doubt maybe the goodness of that God or the ability, the power of that God. And so Christians in particular, this is a safe place for you. Hopefully you've realized that since we've been talking about these kinds of things over the past few weeks. Who here has struggled with doubt precisely because of the injustices in the world? Like it's made you wonder. Yeah. Yeah, and of course there's non-Christians, there's atheists, there's agnostics in here that's one of the reasons why they don't believe. Because they see the brokenness around. And atheists and non-Christians in particular might look at religious people and say, in the name of God, you guys have committed great injustices. In the name of religion, horrible things have taken place. And of course, they're right, right? Certainly in the name of religion, many injustices have happened. Christians used the Bible in order to defend slavery. In the name of Allah, great atrocities have happened. And yet at the same time, great atrocities, maybe even greater injustices, have happened in the name of irreligion as well. You have the greatest, most deadliest century ever, last century, the 1900s, and you had two world wars, you had 123 million people die by the hands of oppressive powers, you had wars and Holocaust, and it was not in the name of religion, right? You had genocide after genocide after genocide. You had the genocide of my people, the Armenians, where the Ottoman Empire slaughtered 1.5 million Armenians. Right? I'm pretty sure that all that got out were the Essenes and the Kardashians, okay? Right? So God made good of that. You got a church and you got reality TV. But injustices have, I mean, the greatest injustices were found in the 20th century. And Stalin, Hitler, Mussolini, none of them were very, very religious. If anything, those were done in the name of irreligion. And so the common denominator isn't God. It isn't religion. The common denominator for the atrocities in the world are people. Humanity. Humanity. But here's the thing. If you're an atheist, if you consider yourself irreligious, if you're honest, if you take your worldview to the logical conclusion, you don't have an answer for the injustices in the world. Right? So Richard Dawkins, great, famous, you know, atheist, he said this, he's honest. He says, the total amount of suffering per year in the natural world is beyond all decent contemplation. In a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt, other people are going to get lucky, and you won't find any reason or any rhyme or reason in it, nor any justice. The universe that we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is, at bottom, no design, no purpose, no evil, no good, nothing but pitiless indifference, right? Basically saying there's no hope for justice. And then he goes on. We cannot admit that things might be neither good nor evil, neither cruel nor kind, but simply callous, indifferent to all suffering, lacking all purpose. As the unhappy poet put it, for nature, heartless, witless nature, we neither care nor know. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Right? Brother is way more depressed than Solomon in Ecclesiastes. Dawkins is saying there's no justice because life is just that way. If there is no God and there is no right and wrong, then you can't say something is right or wrong. There's no injustice. There's no oppression. That's just life. But the Christian who looks at the injustices of the world and can call it sin has hope. Maybe there will be a rescuer who can save us from sin. Maybe there's a God who not only rescues us from sin, but promises to put everything back together and will wipe away every tear. Maybe there's a God who will do that. So there's hope if we can call it what it is, if we can say it's broken, if we can say it's sin. And so the reality of injustice and suffering in the world isn't proof that God doesn't exist or that God isn't good. It's proof that humanity exists and is very, very broken. That's all that injustice does, okay? And that we're sinful and we need a rescuer. And so I think Ecclesiastes is going to help us with this. It's a very honest, honest book. And Solomon takes a very honest, honest look at the injustices around us. If you haven't ever read Ecclesiastes, let me just give you a quick background. It's written by Solomon, right? King Solomon. And he basically gives us a tour of all of life, right? He's just very real and honest. And he basically puts life in your hands. And through the book, he just kind of turns it around in your hands and shows you every aspect of life. And he's like, you know, here's pleasure and here's work and here's God and here's suffering. Here's different seasons of life. And he's just showing us what's wrong with the world. And Solomon experienced everything that this life has to offer in an extreme way, right? In the ways in which you would want, in the ways in which you and I are pursuing, right? Money and pleasure and experience and relationship and power. He experienced it way beyond anything that we could ever experience. And he says in the book over and over again, all of it is meaningless. It didn't satisfy. And so if he sounds depressed, it's because he is, right? He has experienced everything that we are pursuing, hoping to find joy in, and he has found that there is no joy in it. And so brother's depressed. Like when you read Ecclesiastes, you got to put Radiohead on, you've got to get into a dark room, you've got to like be in that kind of mood to listen, to read it, because you want to give him a hug, okay? You want to give him a hug, but he asks the tough questions, and so he's helpful. He asks the tough questions. He's not afraid of questioning or wondering or doubting even. And so he gives us permission to do that as well. And so in our text, he comes to the question of injustice, and he's going to have three observations as he looks at the world. He's going to have three observations on the topic of injustice. So here's the first one, okay? The reality of injustice. Okay, so verse 16, the reality of injustice. He says, "Moreover, I saw under the sun that in the place of justice, even there was wickedness. And in the place of righteousness, even there was wickedness." And then jump down to chapter 4, verse 1. "Again, I saw all the oppressions that are done under the sun. And behold, the tears of the oppressed, they had no one to comfort them. On the side of their oppressors, there was power." Isn't that always the case? "And there was no one to comfort them. I thought the dead who are already dead, more fortunate than the living who are still alive, but better than both is he who has not yet been and has not seen the evil deeds that are done under the sun." He's pointing out the reality of injustice, what we see. He's saying, "I see what you see." And two times in verse 16, he uses the form of the word wickedness. And three times in verse 1, chapter 4, verse 1, he uses the form of the word oppressed. That's what injustice is. It's the wickedness of humanity oppressing others, right? That's what injustice is. And it's so bad that in verse 2 and 3, he's like, it'd be better off not being born, right? It'd be better off dead. Everything is broken, Solomon is saying. Right? Can you imagine, like Solomon saw some things, we see some things. Can you imagine all that God sees? Like, just imagine the sheer weight and burden and grief of seeing all that God sees, the tears of the oppressed. He hears everyone. Psalm 56, it says, God counts our tears and collects them in a bottle. Do you know how many bottles God must need to collect the tears of the oppressed? I mean, can you imagine? Like, we see some of the injustices, some of the oppression. Can you imagine seeing all that God sees, the reality of it? Statistics put sexual assault at 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men, but you know what? Most don't report it. Most don't say anything. God sees. God hears their cries, their silent cries. He knows. And Solomon, he points out the worst of it. He says that there's wickedness, there's oppression, even in the place of justice. Right? In the very place where there should be justice, in the very place where you should be safe, that's where we find injustice. So in the courts, in the laws, in the government, the very place where justice should be meted out, he finds injustice. We do as well, right? Sometimes the innocent are declared guilty. That's an injustice. Sometimes the guilty are declared innocent. That's injustice. Drug laws sometimes are way worse than convictions for rape or abuse. It's legal to terminate life in the womb. Laws historically have been used to oppress minorities and women, right? There's mass incarceration that has been targeted towards minority groups. In the place of justice, we find injustice. Solomon says, in the place of righteousness, we find injustice as well. Some of you have experienced injustice in the church, the place of righteousness. Right? There was abuse and it was covered up. You grew up in that church where they had what I call hyper-complementarianism. We're a complementarian church. We rejoice in it. Right? We love the different roles that God has given men and women. But that hyper-complementarian church where if there's abuse in the home, like physical or emotional abuse in the home, the church leaders are not, like, they're saying you can't leave to go protect yourself. That's ridiculous. Leave. Get out of there so we can help you. Where submission is domination and not dying headship from the husband, that's ridiculous. Read your Bible. It's terrible teaching. Some of you grew up in that kind of place. The place of righteousness was a place of injustice, right? Something happened and you weren't heard. You weren't believed. That's an injustice. For some of you, the place of righteousness was supposed to be your home or your school or your team. It was a place where there was somebody in power, somebody in authority, and they were meant to protect you. They were meant to keep you safe. And you weren't. And so Solomon, he recognizes this, he finds injustices everywhere, and there's a reason why he sees things and sees that they're wrong, and why we see things, no matter what we believe about God or morality, right? No matter what we believe about Christianity or atheism, all of us can look at something going on in the world and we can say, that's wrong, that's an injustice. There's a reason why innately we know that, and it's because stamped on your very soul, whether you believe in a soul or not, is something called the Imago Dei, right? The image of God. So Genesis 1, 27, it tells us about this. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Every human being made in the image of God, right? God's image is stamped on them. This gives you inherent dignity, value, and worth and significance. You don't need it from anything else. You don't need to go looking for it. You have it because you were made in the image of God. You're beautiful and important, and you have value because you were made in the image of God. We are made in God's image, all of us, meaning we are like God. God is sharing with us some of his attributes, some of the ways in which he is like. They're called his communicable attributes. Okay, so emotion and reason and love and kindness, these are things that God has made us in. They're like him. We're a representation of what God is like. We're an image of God, right? Images are meant to image. They gather light, they collect the light, and then show off, they represent what they are imaging. I have a picture of my girls in my office. Here it is. And it's in my office, and it's a picture of my girls. Those aren't actually my girls, okay? That's a picture of my girls. So it's in my office. Like, I don't kiss the picture. I don't tickle the picture. I don't roll around in the office on my lunch break playing with the picture. Because that'd be weird, right? It's just a picture. It's an image. It's the light of them. And it's meant to remind me of them. This is what they look like, and this is their smile, and this is their eyes, and I should go home soon, and right? This is a picture, and it's meant to stir in me who they actually are and what they are actually like. And in the same way, in a very similar way, God made you in his image. You are his picture. We are meant to show people what God is like. Our purpose is to give people a taste of what God is like. Oh, this is how God must talk, and this is how God must react, and this is how God is. And oh, do you see how they responded to that injustice? That must be how God responds to that injustice. That's what we're meant to do. And every person that you have ever met is made in that same image. C.S. Lewis, he said, you have never met a mere mortal. You've never met anyone ordinary. Besides God, your neighbor is the holiest being you will come across. Right? Besides God, the person you work with, the homeless man, the person that has a different color skin or different religion or different political leaning than you is the most holy being you have come across. There are no mere mortals, all stamped, sealed with this image of God. And so then, when that image of God is oppressed or mistreated, deep in our soul, we know it's wrong. We know that it's wrong. When something is of value, we instinctively want to protect it. Right? If you see somebody kick their dog, you're like, well, that's not okay. You see somebody throw trash out the window while they're driving, we can't believe it. We shake our head because we value creation. We value the dog. We want to protect it to some degree. In the same way, God has given us intrinsic value, the greatest value even in all of creation. He's given us his image, nothing else. And so we want to protect it. So something in us says that's wrong. It's wrong. The greatest commandment is to love God. The second greatest commandment is to love our neighbor who is made in the image of that God. So this is a big deal. Solomon, he knows this. He understands the image of God, and so he can rightly look out at the world and say, there's injustice. There's oppression. This isn't okay. So there's the reality of injustice, but then the second thing Solomon observes is that God will have justice. Okay, so verse 17, God will have justice. He says in verse 17, I said in my heart, he's going to preach to himself, God will judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time for every matter and for every work. Right? So Solomon is grieved at the injustices that he sees. He's grieved not just at the oppression, but at the lack of justice for the oppressed. He's grieved in that, and so he begins to preach to himself. Right? He says, I know God will have justice. I know he's going to do that. Earlier in chapter 3, he has the famous sayings where there's a time and a season for everything, right? There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance and so on. And so he says, well, there must be a season, a time for God to have justice, right? God's going to rightly judge this. He's going to fix this. God will take care of this. He's preaching to himself. God will have justice. He knows the character of God. And when it comes to injustice, when it comes to the tears of the oppressed, this is a conflict between those in power who are oppressing and the oppressed. This is a conflict where we are not unclear about what side God has taken. The scriptures are very clear what side God is on in this fight between the oppressed and those that are oppressing. I'll give you some examples. Zechariah 7. Thus says the Lord of hosts, render true judgments, show kindness and mercy to one another. Do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor, and let none of you devise evil against another in your heart. Psalm 103:6, the Lord works righteousness and justice for all who are oppressed. Isaiah 61:8, for I, the Lord, love justice. God isn't okay with unjust laws. Psalm 94:20, can wicked rulers be allied with you, those who frame injustice by law, by statute? I can go on and on. I can find 100 other verses in the Bible that say the same thing, that God is for the fatherless, he's for the widow, he's for the sojourner, the foreigner. In verse 1 again, chapter 4, verse 1, it says, on the side of the oppressors, there was power. Our only hope is that there is someone that has greater power on our side, on the side of the oppressed, on the side of the weak, on the side of the broken. Our only hope is that there is someone with greater power. God is more powerful. God is a greater king. And his love is strong, right? His love is fierce. His love are like flashes of fire, and they will burn hot against anyone that would oppress his little ones. And how terrible of a dad would I be if somebody hurt one of my daughters and I just said, well, what's right for them and wrong for them is up to them. Who am I to judge? Terrible. It's not popular to talk about God's judgment. It's not popular to talk about hell. It's not popular to talk about the justice of God, the wrath of God. But then we look at the world around us and we demand justice. Do you know who typically doesn't have a hard time thinking of the judgments of God, the wrath of God? Do you know who doesn't really have that hard of a time with that kind of God? Minority groups that have been oppressed for decades and centuries. They don't have that hard of a time thinking about a God. They really hope that God is a God of justice. It's actually a pretty privileged position. It's kind of a self-righteous position, actually, to ignore or outright deny the wrath of God. Like, you've had a pretty good life if you can't see the necessity of a God who will have right justice on those who are oppressed, the atrocities that have been done to your neighbor. Without justice, we should not talk about love with a straight face. We should not talk about a God of love if we cannot talk about a God of wrath. Who are we to do that? How could God not be angry at those that would harm and hurt and abuse those that he loves? No, God is very angry at the injustices in the world. He is the defender. He is the protector of the oppressed. And out of his love, he has wrath. Out of his love, he will have justice. We can't cry out about sex trafficking and abuse and racism and at the same time flinch at a God who judges. We can't apologize for believing in a God of judgment and wrath. We can't do that. Christians, when you do that, when you talk about all the injustices in the world and you post on Facebook and all of that kind of stuff, but then you apologize for or soften the truth about hell or judgment or wrath, when you do that, you're saying to the non-Christians around you two things. You're saying humanity is the answer to the injustices around us. We can take care of this. Yeah, we're the cause of it, but we'll fix this. If we just get enough causes, enough nonprofits, we get enough people involved, then we'll eradicate all of this, right? We can handle it. And what you're also telling the watching world is that you're a better God than God, that you are more kind, that you are more loving, that you are more patient, and that's just not true. You're not. You're not. People want justice. We have a God of justice. People in power are oppressing the weak. We have a God who's more powerful. And so God will have justice, right? God is a loving God. God is a loving Father. He's a just God. He's going to bring about justice. But what Solomon is saying when he says there is time in verse 17, there is a time for this, he's saying that sometimes God delays justice. And that's his third observation in verse 18. Right? Sometimes God delays injustice. Verse 18, I said in my heart, with regard to the children of man, that God is testing them, that they may see that they themselves are but beasts. For what happens to the children of man and what happens to the beast is the same. As one dies, so dies the other. They all have the same breath, and man has no advantage over the beast, for all is vanity. All go to one place, all from the dust, all are from dust, and all to dust will return. Who knows whether the spirit of man goes upward and the spirit of the beast goes down into the earth? So I saw that there is nothing better than that a man should rejoice in his work, for that is his lot. Who can bring him to see what will be after him? Solomon is saying, he says, apart from God, aren't we just like the beasts devouring one another? In sin, apart from God, aren't we pretty much just like the animals then? The New Testament says the same thing. Paul says in Galatians 5, he says to the church, but don't bite and devour one another. Watch out that you're not consumed by each other. In sin, it doesn't seem like we're all that different, right? We have reason, we have opposable thumbs, just better tools to oppress one another with. What Solomon is saying is that in delaying justice, God is showing us that not only are we the oppressed, but we're the oppressors. He's saying not only is there a problem, but you and I are a part of the problem. Think of the atrocities done in history. And just think of a couple of them. And then just think of some of the atrocities that you've done. Think of some of your sin. Is it really all that different? I haven't murdered anybody. Do you have bitterness in your heart? I woke up this morning, and I wake up Sunday mornings a little foggy sometimes. I wake up a little bit earlier than normal, and I woke up this morning with bitterness in my heart towards someone I haven't even seen in like 3-4 years. Do you have bitterness in your heart? Maybe you haven't committed adultery. Maybe you haven't committed abuse, God forbid. Do you have lust in your heart? Maybe you haven't stolen anything or stolen a lot of things or stolen a big thing. Do you have covetousness in your heart? Do you want something that somebody else has? The very same sins that lead to the great injustices that we cry out to God for are in our heart as well. And we say, look at all the injustice. How horrible. Where is the justice, God? And God says, I will have justice. But out of my grace, out of my love for you, it's delayed. Because you would be included in that justice. And I want you to see your need for a savior too. You see, sin fractures the image of God that we were made in. We were made in the image of God. We're beautiful. We're God's image bearers. But sin has fractured it. We're a tattered picture now. We're broken. We're distorted. We don't represent God perfectly. We don't represent what he is like. Sin has done that. And so we have sin. We have pride. And in pride, we idolize something. And if we idolize something, we are going to demonize the opposite of that thing. That leads to injustice. But if you idolize America, you're going to demonize other nations. It's just the way it is. If in your pride you idolize your race or your culture, you're going to demonize other races and other cultures. If you idolize your socioeconomic status or your way of life or, you know, your morality even, you're going to demonize those that do it differently. That leads to injustices. If you get a big group of you doing it, then now we're in trouble. Or we have sin like greed, right? Where money and stuff become ultimate, where God's created stuff becomes more important to us than God himself. And when we worship created things, what we do is we dehumanize the greatest of creation, humanity. Those that are made in the image of God. We like his stuff, not made in the image of God, more than we love and care for his image bearers. So we dehumanize one another. Sin dehumanizes us and we dehumanize one another. And so if you've ever felt more important, if you've ever felt more superior, if you've ever felt better than somebody else, if you've ever ignored someone intentionally, you have the very same sin in your heart that causes the injustices in the world. And so we fall under the same judgment of God. Justice is delayed as grace to you. 2 Peter 3, it says this. It says, the Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise as some count slowness. but is patient towards you, not wishing that any should perish, but all should reach repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burned up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done on it will be exposed. We need to be rescued from sin too. And so people blame God, right? We Christians, we can lead to doubt. Non-Christians, non-believers, it can lead to unbelief. People blame God or deny God because of the reality of injustices in the world. And they ask, how could God be good? How could God be powerful and let this happen? What if that's the wrong question? What if the right question would be, how could God be so good to me? How could God be so good to me, a sinner? How could God be good to people like us who hurt each other so often? How could God be good when people hurt one another so bad and yet he is still good to us? How could he do that? John Piper, he asks it this way, how can God be a God of justice yet allow so much good to happen to people who dishonor him by disbelieving in him? Or giving lip service to his existence, or paying more attention to him than the carpet in their den, or rejecting the kingship of his son, or scorning his word, or preferring 100 pleasures before him. How can God be righteous and do so much good to us who are so unrighteous? Right, we shake our fist at God when a plane falls into, or planes fly into the World Trade Center. We shake our fist at God when there's sin or when there's suffering around us, when there's cancer, we shake our fist at God when there are injustices. Where was God when we needed you? Where was God? Where was God when things were good? Where was God when last year over 3 million healthy babies were born in America? Where was God when the earth yesterday made its revolution perfectly and continues to revolve around the sun right now at a perfect distance so as not to burn us up or freeze us? Where was God? Where was God when you drove safely to church this morning? Where was God when 679,820 flights landed safely at DFW Airport last year? Where was God when you were eating medium rare steak, right? Like really, really good steak, right? And you had an $18 bottle of Cab. Like you went big time. Right? None of that $12 stuff. Where was God then? Where was God? Right? Where was God when you were hanging out with friends? Where was God when you were making love to your spouse? Where was God when you were playing with your kids? Where was God in all of the good things? Think about that. Think about how many miles you drove safely last year. Think about how many breaths you took. How many joys did God summon from his sovereign throne that you might enjoy life? Where was he? Psalm 115, it says, our God is in the heavens and he does all that pleases him. And so what pleased him, what he was doing, where he was ruling and reigning from his throne and doing 10,000 things that you might have good things, joyful things, and yes, hard things. And it pleases him to be patient with sinners, even if it means there is injustice in the world. If we acknowledge that sin exists, if we acknowledge that sin is the problem, we have hope. We have hope. Because then we can look at the brokenness, we can look at the injustices around us, and we can call it something, we can name it, and then we could hope that there is a God who does something with sin. Behold, the Lamb of God who takes away sin. Jesus died for sinners and rose again that we might push back the darkness that's in our own hearts that causes injustices. But more than that, man, Christianity is not about a ticket to heaven. Jesus, it's too small. Jesus is doing way bigger things than just getting you a ticket to heaven, right? Nosebleed seats, man, that's probably you. But he's doing more than that. He's putting the world back together again. See, our ultimate hope is in the hope of this new kingdom, this new heaven, this new earth, where there's a new one in power, Jesus. He's the only one in power, and he's good. An eternity without oppression, without injustice, without abuse, without corruption, that's what we get. Right? The Christian life in Christ is a life of suffering and grief. It's Ecclesiastes with little tastes of joy, little tastes of beauty. But the Christian life is also an eternity without any suffering and any tears. We suffer for a moment. It's light and momentary affliction, but it won't compare to the eternal weight of glory that awaits us. And so it's this truth, the hope of the resurrection, the glory of the new kingdom, that gives us courage and strength and hope as we look at the injustices around us. And it should compel Christians to step into the fray, right, with hope. Not that we can fix it on our own, but that God's going to fix it. And we want to give people a taste of what he's like, what he's doing. Christians, when everybody else is running out, we should be the ones that are running in. We should be the first that are pushing back oppression and darkness, right? The tears of the oppressed, they cry out. God hears them because we know that he does because he's heard us. And so we hear them. Right? We talk about our strategy as a church, right? We're going to saturate Fort Worth with the glory and grace of Jesus. How do we do that? Well, our strategy is threefold, and it's all of these things that you get to be part of. Right? We get to push back darkness, jump into our city renewal ministries. This stuff is happening in our backyard. Sex trafficking, abortion, orphan care, right? These things are happening, refugees in our backyard. Jump into our city renewal ministries. Let's push back the darkness in our city. We plant churches, right? So we can saturate this city with the glory and grace of Jesus. Be a part of that with us. And we preach the gospel, because here's the thing, man, listen, what people need the most, what they need the most is to hear of a great and big and mighty God who is furious at what has happened to them and who is protecting them and defending them and who has come to rescue them. And so proclaim that. Right, join us in city renewal. Join us as we plant churches. Join us as we proclaim the good news of Jesus. We as Christians, not because we're great at all, but because our God is great, can have an answer to the injustices that are around us. And so let's do that. I want to talk to my friend Kelly. Kelly, come on up. You nervous? You all right? Okay. How are you?
Good.
Yeah?
Good.
Good. Kelly and I were in a city group a long time ago.
Yes.
For a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you're in social work.
Yes.
Right? When we were in city group, we would have these conversations a lot. So I know the answer to this question, but I want them to hear it. Just how has the reality of just the injustices that you see, what you come across day in and day out, how has that affected your relationship with God, your belief in God, all of that?
Mm-hmm. I think I struggled a lot with injustice even before my current job, just through my social work program and the stuff that we were being confronted with there. But it's really in my current job where I had to wrestle with my faith and how I was relating to God and seeing this day to day. And so I'm a therapist at the Women's Center and a rape crisis center. And so just day after day, I'm hearing these stories of sexual assault or other kinds of abuse. And I have a lot of kids I see a lot of kids for mm-hmm. my clients who are in the care of their grandparents. And so to me, it was like, I'm seeing generational violence, generational poverty, generational suffering.
Yeah.
And so just through that every day, just these questions started to bubble up. And I just noticed this rage inside. I can't even use the word anger because it was felt more than that. Like physically felt it in my body.
Yeah.
And I realized that was directed at God at the time. Yeah. And so these questions just started bubbling up, like, do you see this, God? Like, how are you seeing this? Where are you in this? And a lot of my clients are not believers. They mm-hmm. don't know the Lord. And so it was kind of like a lot of it was because of their abuse. They couldn't believe in a God,
sure.
or actually because of abuse in churches. And
sure.
so I was like, you're not even giving them a chance to know you,
yeah.
you know? Where is the hope for them?
Yeah.
So I felt myself just doubting if I could trust in his goodness,
yeah.
and that doubting if I could trust that he's just.
Wow. So what are ways in which God then met you in that? What are ways in which he maybe even comforted you in that? Like, how did he respond to that when you...
Yeah. So because I was just so angry, I literally could not pray these like sweet little hopeful prayers that I was praying
yeah.
anymore. So I just started pouring out to him that I was angry at him, that,
mm-hmm.
That I didn't see how he was working in this, that, I felt like he was passively sitting by as generations suffered before him.
Yeah.
And so with me, it was only through me being honest in prayer and through repeated prayer over and over again that he just met me in that. And one night hit me with Psalm 18. And it was just this beautiful, terrifying image of the wrath of God. So it talks about him. So David cried out to him and he heard David's prayer. And in defense of David against his enemy, he came down with smoke coming out of his nose and hailstones and coals of fire coming out of his feet. And it said the earth rocked and reeled.
Yeah.
And so he just used that to show me that he hates injustice, that he is fighting, actively fighting for his people, that he cares about the suffering of his people.
Wow.
And then a few months later, you preached a sermon in Habakkuk. And there's the verse that says the earth will fill the earth with his glory.
Yeah.
And so again, he just met me in that and used that to show me that, that he will eradicate sin and suffering of this earth.
Yes.
That is something that he will do.
Yeah.
And so that was the first time I felt, a renewed sense of hope for my clients and just for the brokenness of this world.
Yeah. That's good. How are friends, in particular Christians, so I imagine this would be helpful for people to hear. How did they care for you in those moments when they were dark? How did they not care for you very well in those moments when it was dark?
Yeah, my community was amazing. I think the best thing that they did for me was just let me be there. They kind of sat with me in that and walked with me in that, encouraged me to bring it before the Lord over and over and over again, and kind of shared that they were doubting too, that they had their own struggles with their faith.
Yeah.
So it just gave me the freedom to talk about it and to bring it before the Lord.
Yeah.
And then what I think was not very helpful, I would read these scriptures that God cares about the poor and the oppressed. And so when people would put that in front of me with good intention, but it honestly just made me more frustrated because I was like, I know, I've read that, I know that,
yeah.
but it's not what I'm seeing.
Sure.
That's not what I'm believing right now.
Yeah.
And so I just needed Jesus to personally speak that to me.
That's
and
good.
And then it's not to say that God can't use people to speak truth to
sure.
other people.
Sure.
I believe that. I've seen that happen. But for me at that time, I needed God to break through and tell me that himself. And
wow.
just because he hears me and he's faithful, he did that.
Yeah. Where are you now?
Yeah. It's not over. I still struggle with it all the time. I still have doubts all the time. You know, I mean, I still hear these stories every day. So something new will hit and I'm like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
But I bring that before the Lord every time and he's faithful to meet me there. He's faithful to
yeah.
either show me more of himself or just, kind of be like, I know,
yeah.
you know, I see it too.
Okay.
So.
Good.